Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. It means a lot to hear from you. Today we have with us T.N. Hari, and we will speak with him about his new bestseller, Saying No to Jugaad, the incredible story of Big Basket.
I have been an active participant in the country startup ecosystem, you know, involved with, accelerators, VC funds, early stage startups. I have seen this, ecosystem evolve. And in the last few years, I also realized that, several unicorns were born in India. And I also realized that some of these unicorns were building unsustainable, businesses. They were, highly capitalized, and capital was, inducing them to demonstrate bad behaviors, demonstrate, building businesses which weren't having great product market fits. They were being disguised by, capital, acquiring customers through discounts. So all this, I thought, was in some ways a bit of jugaad, because valuations built this way, can come off just as easily as they get built. And we saw that happening as well. We saw Jabong valuations coming off from $1 billion to $70 million. ShopClues, was the fourth unicorn in the country, was eventually sold off for under $60 million. So I thought, BigBasket is building a business in a very sustainable way. And, valuations have not gone up as steeply as one may have seen in some other unicorns. So I think BigBasket has been built uniquely. We never claimed to be a tech company. We've always said upfront that we are a grocer.
T.N. Hari is an advisor and sounding board to numerous young entrepreneurs and startups. He's also a strategic advisor at Fundamentum, which is a homegrown growth phase VC fund set up by Nandan Nilekani and Sanjeev Agarwal. Hari also heads HR at BigBasket. Hari studied at IIT and IIM and worked at an executive level with multiple startups and scale-ups, has been through four successful exits in different industries, Daksh, Virtusa, Amba Research, and Taxi for Sure. His passion is in scaling organizations through clear thinking and relentless execution. He has co-authored three books, including this one. The last two books were Cut the Crap and Jargon, Lessons from the Startup Trenches, published by Penguin, and Cutting the Gordian Knot, India's Quest for Prosperity, which was published by Bloomsbury. Now, onto this inspiring and insightful episode with T.N. Hari. Hari, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm so delighted to have you back, although in a different show now. What a wonderful title for a book, Saying No to Jugaad. How did you sort of think of writing this book?
First of all, thank you, Subhanjan, for inviting me for the show. It's a pleasure being on your show. So I think I loved writing No to Jugaad. I had a co-author, Subramanyam or Mani. Both of us, co-authored this book. We enjoyed this journey thoroughly. So I think the thought of this book, really came from looking at the ecosystem around you. So I have been an active participant in the country startup ecosystem, involved with, accelerators, VC funds, early stage startups. I have seen this ecosystem evolve. And in the last few years, I also realized that several unicorns were born in India. And I also realized that some of these unicorns were building unsustainable businesses. They were highly capitalized, and capital was inducing them to demonstrate bad behaviors, demonstrate building businesses which weren't having great product market fits. They were being disguised by, you know, capital, you know, acquiring customers through discounts. So all this, I thought, was in some ways a bit of jugaad, because valuations built this way, you know, can come off just as easily as they get built. And we saw that happening as well. You know, we saw Jabong valuations coming off from $1 billion to $70 million. ShopClues, you know, was the fourth unicorn in the country, was eventually sold off for under $60 million. So I thought, you know, BigBasket is building a business in a very sustainable way. And, you know, valuations have not gone up as steeply as one may have seen in some other unicorns. But I believe that the business is built in a very sustainable way. It has been built at the intersection of, you know, customers, employees and investors, addressing all their needs simultaneously, not overtly focusing on one to the exclusion of the other, and doing this all the time. And I think this hasn't been easy. It has also, you know, required us to answer some difficult questions upfront. Why does a customer really shop with BigBasket? And having answered this question, I think at different points of our journey, when we saw some contradictions and we were faced with some difficult issues, it helped us address those, you know, in a much better way, more coherently, more consistently, because we had answered this question thoughtfully. So I think BigBasket has been built uniquely. We never claimed to be a tech company. We've always said upfront that we are a grocer. We are a retail company. We have no pretensions to being a tech company. Just as Jet Airways or Jet Airlines or Lufthansa has no pretensions to being a tech company. They are, you know, airlines. They are, and they're using technology. We are also a retail company using technology. I want to make that clear upfront. I think as a company, we chose to do all the right things. We chose to do the right things for the right reasons. Never did anything for the wrong reasons. So I thought it's a unique story worth telling. And the title saying No to Jugaad truly reflected who we are as a company.
Oh, that's wonderful. So when did you decide that this was the time that we need to actually articulate this alternate vision of building a company?
So Subhanjan, I write books pretty quickly. I'm not the one who, you know, who agonizes and thinks about a book for a year, takes one more year to write about a book. I think I decide to write a book quickly. And once having decided to write a book, I get it written in 3 to 5 months. And therefore, I have picked topics which I understand deeply. I haven't picked topics where I need to go out and meet 100 people, interview them, figure out what's happening in the industry, get insights from other people. So most of my books have been insights that I have developed over the years all by myself. Therefore, writing hasn't been a problem with me, because all the thinking has been done, all the assimilation has been done, all the insights have been developed over the years. And some of them have also found you know, a place in the form of articles that I've done on LinkedIn, in the form of articles that I've written in newspapers and magazines. I'm a regular columnist at Mint. So I think a lot of the thought had already been formed. So for me, writing about BigBasket was, you know, in some ways decided, I think last December 2018 was when I decided that this is a topic worth writing about. So that was when I decided I'll write this book. Spoke to Bloomsbury. Bloomsbury was very excited. So we began writing this book. Mani and I both have been BigBasket veterans. We understand BigBasket very well. I don't think we needed to do a lot of research. We spoke to a few people because we were telling stories of some individuals who were relatively unknown outside of BigBasket. This was not about the BigBasket founders. This was about the story of the ordinary people, you know, who built BigBasket, who made this company what it is. So to understand their, you know, stories, we had to speak to them. And it was only for that purpose we had to speak to them. Otherwise, we pretty much knew everything that was happening. And of course, we did consult the experts. So when it came to writing about the way we looked at technology, the way we looked at product, the way we looked at supply chain, we did obviously chat with the national supply chain head, the CTO, the, you know, head of product. We spoke to these individuals. We spoke to the person, Vipul Mittal, who runs our fruits and vegetables section, to understand this a little better and get some nuances which we may have missed out. That's how we went about writing this book.
Did you choose Mani to become your co-author? Was it that you were sitting and one day you were sort of brainstorming and you had this idea in your head that now is a good time to write the book, and you sort of discussed with him and he said, okay, I'm in? So how did that happen?
Yeah, I think the latter. So normally I have picked my co-authors, but, you know, I pick them pretty carefully. And each of these co-authors, whichever book I chose to write, you know, were those who could, you know, help develop some of the thoughts and topics that I had in mind. So when it came to writing this book, I thought Mani would be an ideal partner. And Mani is also the kind of person who is, you know, perceptive individual, who is always not just executing stuff, but also thinking, which means that he's looking for insights. He's looking for some patterns. He is an analytics professional who also knows how to write English in English well,
right,
and communicate thoughts well. So I thought he would be the right partner for me.
Okay, so once you had discussed this, by the time you were discussing this with him, were you already sort of clear about the structure that this will be this 16 chapters and this is how I'm going to do it?
Not really. Okay. I didn't have clarity in terms of the chapters, I think. I just had clarity that this book will be the story of Big Basket. And between the two of us, we sat together and figured out what should be the chapterization, what should be the broad themes, topics we should write.
Okay. And so just unpack that a bit for me. Obviously, the background of your writing, various columns that you mentioned, your LinkedIn posts and your column in Mint and so on, how did you sort of collate those and sort of worked on the structure of the book, the narrative and then the structure?
So I think, you know, we thought about what are the unique elements of Big Basket. We sat and spent some time whiteboarded this and we figured out, you know, culture is an important component of Big Basket, unique culture. So that was clearly one chapter. Our supply chain, we decided that as, you know, a company, we needed to own the inventory. We didn't go down the path of, you know, aggregating grocery by picking it from different, you know, stores and then delivering to customers. We figured out we needed to have our own warehouses, own our own inventory, buy directly from distributors and manufacturers. So we thought, you know, that's an important topic to write about, supply chain. Fruits and vegetables is one of the differentiating, you know, elements of Big Basket. So that was a big section. We decided to write about that. The way we built technology, the fact that we were, you know, a technology-enabled company, we're not a tech-first company, that became an important chapter. So we picked chapters around these themes. Analytics, you know, was an important chapter for us. And we decided that, you know, we will tell stories of people, you know, around these chapters. So when it came to culture, we talked about some very specific cases. We talked of specific stories. When it came to supply chain, we talked of the story of our national supply chain head, who came from very adverse circumstances and grew up in a small village, had education in Telugu medium, did odd jobs. And when he was 35 years old, he was the national supply chain head for a company like Big Basket. So from what, where to where an individual like that. So it's a story worth telling. I believe in the power of stories. I think through stories, you can communicate lessons. I think when I started writing sometime in 2003, I never really understood the power of storytelling. So my writing was a bit bland, was a bit boring, focusing on, you know, the learning very directly. And I think people assimilate learning if communicated through stories. So I think you should be able to intersperse powerful learning with powerful stories. I think that's the best way. And I've chosen to do it this way in this book. So stories were very clear to me, going to be there all along the book. So I told the story of, you know, Tejas, who was our VP or Chief Product Officer, told the story of someone like Rakshit, who's our CTO, Neelam Aluwalia, who joined us as a National Head of Training, Tanuja Tiwari, who's our Head of HR, Stephanie, you know, who's joined us as an intern and won the, you know, Beacon of Values about four times in a row. So stories of these such amazing individuals. So that's how we about.
It's time for a short break. Hari started narrating why stories engage people better than statistics and how he planned to narrate the story of Big Basket through the amazing stories of its people. As we come back, we'll have a quick dive into the story of Stephanie Paul. Be with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. that is BPN at BIZCAST.IN. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. As we went into the break, Hari elaborated on how stories of amazing people from Big Basket was the basis of the structure of the book. And now we will hear him narrate the inspiring story of Stephanie Paul.
Wonderful. So would you like to, before we move on to another topic, would you like to tell us about one of the stories that you wrote about?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll tell you the story of Stephanie Paul. Stephanie started with Big Basket as an intern. And she was a very, very, you know, tentative individual, obviously like an intern, trying to learn a lot of things. She came from a small village in Karnataka, which is about 80 kilometers from Bangalore. The place is Gudibanda. So it's in Chikmagalur district. So she came from an Anglo-Indian family. And her mother worked as a school teacher. She taught English in a school in that village. And she was the person, you know, the strong person in the family who, you know, brought up the family, gave the family all the values. You know, she worked very hard for the family. And Stephanie learned a lot of her values from her mother. And they came from a poor family. You can imagine a school teacher bringing up a whole family. She had a sister, Stephanie had a sister as well. And her mother worked hard to give good education to both their daughters. And Stephanie joined Big Basket very high on values. She demonstrates, she lives her values every day. She does all the right things every day. And went through very adverse circumstances. She worked very hard. You know, she has rarely taken leave. And whenever she was sick, she would work from home. And nobody asked her to do that. But I think she was deeply committed to doing her work. And her mother passed away all of a sudden. And she was in the hospital with her mother processing payroll when her mother passed away. So it was a deeply touching story. And I think whenever, you know, the management team, every year we, you know, have an annual awards function. And there are different categories of awards. And one category is Beacon of Values. I think when the Beacon of Values got discussed, her name always bubbled to the top. And we never hesitated to, you know, give it to her four times in a row. And we had decided that awards won't be by turns. It's that just because somebody has got it one year, it wouldn't mean that somebody else should get it next year. Next year, again, the best person would be evaluated and the best person would get it. So we said, you know, rewards won't be by turn. So this is the story of Stephanie Paul. I think Stephanie Paul is a great individual. I have been deeply inspired by her. She lives her values every day. She's the kind of person you would want to worship.
That's a great story. That's a great story. Wonderful. Very, very, very inspiring. So moving on, I would touch upon a few of the chapters which sort of stand out. Let's take the bull by the horn, your chapter number 4, Unfazed by Tiger, SoftBank and Amazon. So let's hear that story.
Right. So, you know, basically, I think, you know, Tiger and SoftBank, you know, they were different investors. They were not the regular VC investors. They placed bold bets. They backed brash entrepreneurs. They backed entrepreneurs who could think big, who could dream big, who aimed for the stars. And as investors also, they were wanting to build companies that could emerge winners. And both their belief, I mean, the common belief that both of these investors had was that if you back a young entrepreneur with fire in the belly, with a lot of capital, that's enough to build a very strong business and enough to kill competition. And that was how they backed companies. So when Tiger chose to back a company or when SoftBank chose to back a company, I think competition would really get very scared because they knew that they had no chance for survival because the company that they backed would go on to acquire customers by giving discounts and by, you know, undercutting prices, that the rival would have no chance of fighting a battle. And rival would eventually die because no customers would, you know, go to them. So that was a kind of reputation or fear that these investors drove in the startup ecosystem in India. And I think they backed Ola, both of them. And Taxi for Sure eventually had a difficult time, although the fact that an Uber driver raped a passenger in Delhi was the black swan event that eventually killed Taxi for Sure. But you know, Tiger and SoftBank backing Ola was an important element as well. Both of these eventually ended up backing Flipkart in a very big way. Flipkart went on to emerge as a winner. And so Tiger wanted to look at Big Basket as well in the grocery space. So they met the founders of Big Basket. I think very quickly, Kalyan Krishnamurthy also was in the meeting along with Pixel, Lee Pixel. So obviously, the Big Basket founders were not the kind who Tiger typically would back. The Tiger typically backed young founders, brash founders. But Big Basket founders were, you know, by their standards, more mature, more thoughtful in the way they executed. They would not listen to an investor blindly. They would not be driven by an investor. They would be driven by their own experiences, their own convictions. And I think very quickly, Tiger also told the founders that, you know, I don't think your business model is going to scale for the simple reason that it's a very asset heavy model. You are, you know, building inventory, you are building warehouses, holding your own inventory, whereas it's much easier to scale if you just, you know, have delivery boys who are stationed at Big Bazaar stores or a few other stores and, you know, gather, you know, customer orders based from those particular stores and deliver it to them. So you can go to any city, scale at any pace, you know, you don't have to open stores. So the founders of Big Basket had figured out that that asset-light model is not going to work in grocery because they'll answer this question thoughtfully. Why does a customer shop with us? The reason a customer shopped with Big Basket was because they wanted to avoid a visit to the store, which means that if you order 25 items as a customer, if we give you 24, you have to go to the store for that one item. If you have to go to the store for that one item, you might as well buy the remaining 24 from the store. The reason why customers wanted to shop with us, which is avoiding a visit to the store, if we don't give them fruits and vegetables and do only dry grocery, they have to go to the store for the fruits and vegetables. So we did the entire thing. So which is we held inventory so that we could supply all the 25 items. We supplied fruits and vegetables. We supplied chilled and frozen. And we realized that we can't do all of this with an asset light model because we have no idea what Big Bazaar store in Koramangala has in their inventory, because we don't know what they have in inventory. How can we commit to customers? So customers will place 20 orders. We'll go there and find only 12 and the 8 we can't supply. So we knew asset light model will not work, but you know, they were arrogant and they felt that they knew everything better than anyone else. So they backed companies with an asset light model. All companies with an asset light model eventually died. They just did not survive. Grofers, which both of them backed, very quickly pivoted to an inventory model and just copied Big Basket. So I think this for once, you know, made me personally very happy. You know, seeing SoftBank and Tiger getting bloodied in the nose, which is, it's like the church telling Galileo, you know what, you may think that the earth goes round the sun, but you're wrong. You better confess that the sun goes round the earth. You know, but the church and the Pope can be wrong, no? Your experiences can be much better. So I think this is the story of Big Basket in some ways, which is conviction in yourself, your own experiences, irrespective of what the big guys of investing tell you, irrespective of what the popes of the investing world tell you as to what models have scaled fast in the rest of the world. We know what could scale in India. So that's the story.
Wonderful, wonderful. So that takes me to the next one, which you actually have spoken about a bit, tech-enabled versus tech-led. Would you like to elaborate? I understand that you didn't try to position yourself as a tech company, thereby driving up valuations, but running a tech-enabled operation, like any business too. Yeah. No business can be without tech enablement.
Yeah, I think most companies are tech-enabled. Even today, for example, you go to a Big Bazaar. Big Bazaar has, you know, technology for figuring out what are the inventory levels, at what points of time to reorder, attendance tracking mechanisms. So they have technology, they use technology. A brick and mortar store using technology as an enablement was always known. Nobody ever confused them for tech companies. But, you know, e-commerce companies, there was scope to mislead investors by making them believe that we are tech companies. But we chose to openly tell investors that we are not a tech company. We are a retail company. We are competing with a Big Bazaar. We are competing with a DMart. And that's what we are competing. And for us, we are not easily going to get out of grocery and suddenly begin to sell, you know, cell phones or tennis rackets or electronic items. We are not going to do that because we are not a tech company. Whereas a tech company would figure out, we are a tech company. We have tech capabilities. What all businesses can we do that leverage technology? I think that's the way a tech company would look at it. Whereas the way Big Basket founders looked at it as, we are grocers. How can we do a grocery business better? How can we create better customer experience or employee experience or enhance efficiencies in our warehouses using technology? So there are two different perspectives, two different ways of looking at it. A Flipkart might look at technology as what all can we do. Amazon wouldn't look at it the same way, because Amazon looked at it the same way they created a cloud business. You know, AWS, Amazon Web Services, which is now competing with Microsoft Azure and Google Cloud. So they created a completely new business because that's the way they looked at it. Whereas BigBasket can never and will never be able to create, you know, a different business like what Amazon was able to do, because we claim to be a retail business. That was the way of looking at it.
Right. So the focus gives you the grounding, yet it might mean that you will not do other things. But
yes.
But it makes your business model solid for what you are trying to do.
That's correct. And it helps us develop the right habits. Say, for example, WeWork, right? WeWork was a real estate company masquerading as a tech company. You know, they got a valuation of $45 billion. You know, Morgan Stanley was telling WeWork before they went for an IPO that they could get them $100 billion as a post-money valuation after an IPO. So investment bankers were also misled and further misleading WeWork, whereas its valuation today is almost zero, close to zero. So I think because they developed terrible habits, because they were under the illusion that they were a tech company. They knew they were real estate, but they were under the illusion. They perpetuated that illusion both internally and externally, and therefore created extravagant habits, created wastage, you know, didn't care for making money. So I think if you figure out who you are and acknowledge who you are, then I think you develop habits that are commensurate to who you are. So a retail business is a low margin business. So by acknowledging that, we were creating habits that could support a low margin business.
And I think it's a very interesting point to say, because knowing your passion for people, it basically, you know, will connect back to the culture of the organization that you are trying to build, right? So it's reinforcing.
Absolutely.
It's sort of
Absolutely.
Like a virtuous cycle between
yes,
the two.
Correct.
Good habits, good culture, good habits,
correct.
And so on. Great. So let's talk about frugal marketing. Let's understand, because that's another key component of your book. What is it that Big Basket chose to do differently vis-a-vis the big splash, big spend marketing that typically, you know, your so-called competitors were doing?
Right. So, for example, we got into television advertising very late in the game. And we would never, for example, even dream of sponsoring the Indian cricket team, for instance. So that's something that people never do. Television also we did reluctantly, and we did it because, and we got Shah Rukh Khan because we believed that Shah Rukh Khan would help get brand recognition in tier 2 cities for us. And Shah Rukh Khan's image cut across all segments of society. You know, the men, the women, the children, the old, the young, irrespective of the language. I think everybody could relate to Shah Rukh Khan. And that's the reason why we got a celebrity like Shah Rukh Khan. Otherwise, as a company, we would have been very thoughtful before getting a celebrity like Shah Rukh Khan. Because a celebrity does not reflect our culture. Although in some ways, Shah Rukh Khan's work ethic, you know, Shah Rukh Khan is known to work very hard, demonstrate very professional work ethic, which does reflect what Big Basket is all about. And I think that was the only extravagance that we indulged in. Otherwise, we've been very frugal in the way we've done marketing. We've not spent a lot of money. And we have not even created decentralized marketing teams. We have only one central marketing team that helps all the regions run their marketing campaigns. And we have genuinely believed that the best marketing that we can do is by delivering great customer experience. If you can address customer complaints, deliver a great customer experience proactively, then the word of mouth is sufficient. You have to become indispensable to your target segment. To your target customers, if you become indispensable and they begin to swear by you, you don't need to do any marketing. Your company will get marketed by itself. As a result of which, our brand salience has always been very high. Brand recall has been very high, not just in tier 1 cities, but even in tier 2, tier 3 cities. And tier 2, I would say Shah Rukh Khan has helped a bit. But tier one, largely our, you know, quality of customer experience that we delivered. So people who shop with us swear by us. They say that their life will come to a standstill if Big Basket shuts. So, you know, the intention, the way we built Big Basket was build a business that if it shuts, there would be a public outcry. So that was the kind of business that we wanted to build. Just create such great customer experience that if there is a problem, if we shut, then there will be a public outcry. So we didn't spend at all on marketing. We spent minimal amount on marketing. Instead, we spent all the money on creating some of those great metrics. So for example, fill rate was an important metric for us, which eventually delivered great customer experience. On-time delivery was a metric that created great customer experience. We went ruthlessly after these metrics and ensured that these metrics were always in the range that we wanted. 99.5% was the fill rate, which means on an average, if you order 100 items, a million customers order 100 items, then 99.5% of the million people would get all the items that they want. So that's the kind of fill rate that we, you know, actually got. 99% of our deliveries were on time. So we created and worked out of stock was always very low. You know, number of days inventory was always, you know, tracked. You know, we tracked how we were doing on various line items of costs. Our efficiencies mattered to us. So we, you know, we thought if you run the business well and if you create great customer experience, go after these metrics as if your life mattered, customers will chase you. You don't need to spend marketing dollars. If you spend marketing dollars, draw customers to your business, and if you can't deliver great experience, it is far worse.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
That's a wonderful note to end this chat. Thank you so much. I really think that it was important to balance the view that India was a nation of jugaad. And I think this book should at least start that discussion, if not end it. Thank you, Hari. Thank you for making time. And it was delightful to talk to you as always.
Same here, Subhanjan. Thank you. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thank you.
Coming up in the next episode is a lively conversation with Lisa Magnusson and her recent bestseller, The Top Sales Leader's Playbook.
How do they do that repeatedly? How do they really bring those components into their sales organization so they can replicate that year after year? And what I found, I actually interviewed 41 sales VPs as part of my research for this book, live interviews one-on-one. And I asked them about their goals, about their challenges, about their proficiency with large account selling, and all the components. And what I learned was is most sales leaders don't have a playbook, a sales leadership playbook. They have a sales playbook for their salespeople to follow, and they want their salespeople to follow that playbook because they understand that if they do, they're going to be more successful, easier to manage, common terminology. You can measure it. But they don't have a sales playbook that would yield all the exact same benefits for the sales leadership team. And so through those 41 interviews, that really shaped my thinking on what this book should be. So it truly is a sales leader playbook. And I wrote the book in exactly the manner that those 41 people told me that they would find valuable.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of weeks with great conversations with Dr. Benjamin Hardy on his latest book, Personality Isn't Permanent, Cash Nickerson, and Juan David Campolargo, the youngest author on my show.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.